If there's anything to say about the results of the election, of the presidential race, it's that it defied expectations and most predictions. Many expected to wake up Wednesday morning to hear from President-elect Hillary Clinton. Instead, it was Donald Trump who came out on top. Speaking to supporters last night, he congratulated Clinton on a hard-fought campaign, and he had this message.
For America to bind the wounds of division, have to get together. To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
One of Trump's major victories for the night was Georgia's 16 electoral votes. From there, his path to 270 continued, and he did defeat Clinton in the end, although it looks as though Clinton right now won the popular vote for the moment. For more on last night's election and a look down the ballot, I'm joined by Charles Richardson. He's the editorial page editor for The Telegraph in Macon. Hi, Charles.
Good morning.
And with us from Washington, D.C. is Emory University professor Andra Gillespie. Hi, Andra.
Good morning.
Andra, look, there's a lot of people talking about what the election means, and many of them are characterizing what a vote for Trump meant. But do we know, for the millions of people who supported Trump, do we know what it was they were actually supporting?
Well, if we look at the exit polls, the preliminary data suggests that they wanted a mandate for change. Trump does extremely well amongst those who thought that traits were an important characteristic, or change was an important trait that they wanted in their next president. We also see different perceptions of the world. So, for instance, if you think that we're losing the fight against ISIS, you're more inclined to support Trump, though not to the same degree that those who think that the fight is going well would support Clinton. But it's more of them who think that ISIS, the fight against ISIS, is going poorly. If you thought that Supreme Court appointments were the most important issue, then you were much more likely to support Trump than you were to support Clinton. And then those who didn't think it was that important just tended to be less numerous. In effect, the story of this election is Clinton's underperformance. She didn't lose the constituencies that we thought she would win. It's just that she didn't perform as well amongst those groups, and Trump just had a tighter coalition.
So, Charles, to a certain extent, isn't it fair to say that no matter who won last night, half of the country, or about half, would be angry this morning?
I think that's exactly right. I think they, you know, sometimes image is everything. And I think that Trump was short on details, and you can get by with image. And I think he got by with image. He hit some straight points. He just kept hitting those points over and over again. His message was clear. And he sold a lot of people that message, and it was successful for him.
Joining us from the North Georgia town of Blue Ridge is Mark Thomason. He's the publisher of The Fan and Focus. Thanks for weighing in here, Mark.
Good morning.
So here's the question, and there are many, many questions this morning. But for me, the number one question, and I'll give you all a chance to address this, is how do we get past this? And I say that not because Donald J. Trump won the election. I think it would be true, even if Clinton did, that I think it's going to be, while it may have been successful as a campaign strategy, the divisive election we just went through might make it extremely hard to govern. Are you seeing signs of that, Mark, where you are?
Absolutely. You know, last night I was in a large crowd. There was banner back and forth all night long. It's almost like, the voting population of the country has joined in this fight. It was almost like a boxing match instead of an election. And everyone's going to have to realize, you know, calm those emotions back down. There are real issues at hand, and let's start addressing those issues.
So let me then send that to you, Andra, because a campaign is very different from governance. And many of the promises that Donald Trump made on the campaign trail, like many politicians, frankly, are things that constitutionally he will not be able to follow through with, barring a constitutional amendment. So how does the governance look, do you think?
I think that's going to be really interesting, and I think that's going to show how solid or how fragile a Trump coalition is. One of the things that is interesting, I think this gives us a chance to test our institutions. We're really going to see what separations of powers look like. We really are going to see what checks and balances look like, even with him, with the Republicans controlling Congress. And I think we're going to see whether or not presidential authority expands during this period, as it has historically over the course of the life of our nation, or whether Congress is going to seek to be a check on the power of the presidency and some of the things that, that Donald Trump promised as president that were appeared to be unconstitutional.
My guests are Charles Richardson of The Telegraph in Macon, you just heard Emory University professor Andra Gillespie, and the publisher of The Fanon Focus, Mark Thomason. So, Charles, how much do, say, Trump supporters believe he can deliver? Or do we feel that the American public at large is realistic about what can be accomplished through politics?
Well, I think you make promises, and I think Trump has made a number of them, but you have different segments of the economy that, quite frankly, are roiled this morning. You had the markets drop 800 points last night on the word that he might win. You've got the healthcare sector that is really kind of wondering, okay, what's coming now? You've got the House and Senate and the presidency controlled by Republicans, and they've promised to repeal Obamacare. But what, with what? So they're trying to figure out what's going to happen. What are you going to do? And they're set up to say, okay, now what's coming down the road? And no sector of the economy likes the uncertainty that they are faced with over the next 6-8 months.
So, Mark, we did see record numbers of voters in Georgia, at least, despite people talking about a disenchanted and in some cases disenfranchised electorate. What do you think drove the high numbers here in our state?
Again, I think it was that excitement that seemed to be contagious, whether it was, you know, here locally in North Georgia, we absolutely set record number turnouts. Our early voting numbers were through the roof. And in Fannin County, the voting turnout as a whole was shattering. But I think it was that whole excitement, just like the World Series that just got played. It's that seventh inning, our seventh game, ninth inning, you know, two outs, you're at bat. And I think the voter felt like their vote would actually make a difference this time.
So then let me bring this back, Andra, to what we were talking about a moment ago, because objectively speaking, a number of the catchphrases that Donald Trump used quite a bit in terms of banning Muslims, building a wall that Mexico would pay for, deporting 11 million immigrants. He even expressed support for possibly bringing back the Defense of Marriage Act, which it seems to me that would be those. So many of those things are constitutionally very difficult, if not because of SCOTUS decision, impossible at this point. So I remember the disenchantment with Obama voters when he first got into office and he had said, you know, I'm right out of the gate, I'm going to close Guantanamo. Remember that? And then there was all this disappointment when it turns out that that's not how politics works. Because there was so much divisiveness and passion on both sides, what do we think happens when that disenchantment occurs, as it probably will during a Trump administration?
Well, I think it's really interesting. Because change appears to be the mandate of Donald Trump, he represents a 180-degree turn from politics as usual. And the people who are supporting that, I think, are operating under the principle of it's insane to keep on putting the same people in positions of power and expecting different results. So now we have a nice experiment. We have somebody who is completely different, who's going to bring some familiar faces back, but who's likely going to bring in a very, very fresh-faced team. They have an opportunity to try to implement policy, to try to work with Congress, to see what's going on. So I think the question will be, can this group do something that's different? And that will help to separate what is institutionally possible versus what is institutionally not particularly possible. Because there are certain things that you learn once you get in office that we've structured it for incremental change. We've structured it to make sure that we don't see these radical changes. And that could be comforting on one end when certain things can't change. But then it also, the question then becomes, well, will people be frustrated by the lack of change? And, you know, I'm not quite sure what will happen. We would have to wait to see. Potentially, the next move might be, say, the Trump administration can't get certain things done, would then be to run against Congress and then see whether or not you see a big turnover in the congressional representation, not just amongst Democrats, but also amongst Republicans, too, if not all Republicans get online. I think that's the real interesting thing right now. Even within the Republican camp, those who opposed Trump are probably feeling a little sheepish right now. And so what their fate looks like and what stances they take, I think also look very, very different with the light of day now that the election is over.
So, Mark Thomason, there in North Georgia, did you also get the sense that for the most part, the people who support Trump there were voting for just a clean slate change, wiping it clean, as Trump would say, draining the swamp?
Draining the swamp, absolutely. I've interviewed a lot of Trump supporters at the newspaper, and they list issue after issue that they claim to have a continual problem with, whether they really have or not. You know, we haven't heard them voice those concerns over the past, but they are looking for a complete change.
And Charles, right before we go here for a moment, complete change is going to be difficult to come by. Do we have the patience? Right. Does our electorate have the patience to stick with it anyway?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that you heap on the president. One thing I think President Trump is going to figure out is that the president doesn't have a whole lot of power. You know, we said we've changed the presidency, but here in Middle Georgia, Austin Scott returns to his House seat. Sanford Bishop returns to his House seat. Johnny Isaacson returns to his Senate seat. Senate still doesn't have a 60-vote Republican majority.
Which is required to break filibusters, yeah.
Exactly. So how much can change? And again, there is this bureaucracy in Washington that, as said before, is dealing with incremental change. And each institution sort of has this shield around it to protect itself from quick change. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very interesting time, particularly the first 2 years.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We're taking a look back at results from last night's election, and I've got Charles Richardson with me. He's the editorial page editor for The Telegraph in Macon. Andra Gillespie, Emory University professor, joins us from Washington, D.C., and from North Georgia, the town of Blue Ridge, is Mark Thomason. He's a publisher of the Fanon Focus. So, Charles, we had a surprising flip here in Metro Atlanta, at least. Last night, Cobb County, which has long been a Republican stronghold, flipped over to Clinton while we saw Trump take increasing margins in North and South Georgia. Any idea why we saw those changes?
Well, I think if you drive around Cobb County, you can see them for yourself and many other places in Atlanta. Demographics are changing in Georgia. We didn't have much of that in Middle Georgia, but I think you can see it throughout. It's taking time, but there is a browning of Georgia. More Latinos, Hispanics are moving into the area. Asians are moving into the area, and that's just a natural order of things. You're going to see shifts all over the place, even to Middle Georgia.
But, Andra, I think at this point, both of the major parties, both the Democrats and Republicans, will probably be doing soul searching, don't you think? And I think, as Charles is talking about the browning of Georgia, is it possible that Democrats have assumed that as demographics have changed, that would automatically mean more votes for their party and that they didn't do the outreach they needed to?
I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching, maybe not the same type of soul searching that we thought all the way around. I think most people anticipated that Donald Trump would lose and that the Republican Party was going to have a reckoning about the use of racial rhetoric and racial imagery. I'm not quite sure that conversation is going to be had at this point. And at the same time, the changes that we see in Metro Atlanta, not just Cobb County, but Gwinnett County as well,
yeah,
also turning blue for the first time, does have something to say about race. It also has something to say about class. When we drill down, we're going to have to ask that question about suburban white women. Nationally speaking, though, what was really interesting about this race was that, especially given the racialized rhetoric, we anticipated that Hillary Clinton was going to do better among minority groups than she, in fact, did. Nationally, if we look at the exit polls, Clinton underperformed relative to Obama and actually relative
to especially with black men.
Yes, which is actually not that unusual because that gender gap was present in 2012 as well.
Yeah.
It just got more acute. What seems to happen, it's not that Trump did better amongst these groups, per se. He did do better amongst Asian Americans, or what looks to appear to be mostly Asian Americans. He did do better amongst African Americans than I think people would have anticipated that he would have done. But it was actually in the ballpark of what Republican candidates get generally. And actually at 8%, it actually puts him kind of on the lower end of the spectrum. What was more interesting about last night was the number of people who voted third party. And so Clinton underperforms because those voters who might have otherwise voted for her were choosing to vote for Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. And that contributes to this notion of underperforming. Had all of those people who voted third party or other or didn't cast a vote for president voted for her, this would have been a very, very different outcome.
We've got just about a minute left, Mark. Do you get the sense there in North Georgia that went heavily for Trump that we can now, as an American populace, unite and have civil conversations?
You know, the united part, the coming together, the working together, the people that I've discussed with the election outcome so far, that has not even been a topic or a concern. It's more they're still in celebratory mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully they can. Yeah. We'll see.
Yet to be seen. Yeah. That is Mark Thomason, publisher of The Fan and Focus. And also we had Charles Richardson of The Telegraph in Macon and Andra Gillespie of Emory University. Thanks so much to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.